From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of February 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnutke will be here to talk about crop insurance and the difference between RP and RP with exclusions and what that might mean to your farming operation. We'll discuss the development of the electric cooperatives in the 1930s and look forward to this Thursday's Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale that takes place at 11 o'clock a.m. That's the auction over at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly lower. The nearby March wheat at 6.33 for the soft red, down 11. May contract at $6.36¾, 11 cents lower. July wheat 6.51½, down 8¼. And the September at 6.70, down 7 cents. The hard red harvest month in Kansas City at $6.92½ on a settlement price, down 11½ cents. March corn futures today, 12¼ cents lower, $6.29½. The settlement price, May at 6.33½, down 11¾. July corn, $6.37½, down 10¾. September at $5.91¾, down a nickel. And December corn, 4½ cents lower at $5.63¾ a cent. Next year's March at $5.75½, down 3¾. March soybeans today, $12.71, up 3½ cents. May contract a gainer as well, $12.77. The settlement price, 3¼ higher. July up 3 cents at $12.85. August at $12.79½, up a penny and a half. And November beans at $12.62¼, up a quarter of a cent. Bean meal at $3.30.20, down $2.30. And bean oil in the March contract at $54.06, 66 cents higher on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the April contract at 131, 12 and a half, up 22½ cents. June at 128, 67 and a half, up 20. April feeders at 160, 85, 37 and a half higher. May at 162, 35, up 55. And the May lean hog futures at $98, 72 and a half cents, 17 and a half cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $105.50 a barrel, up $2.26. Ethanol at $2.18¼¢, 3¼¢ lower. Natural gas at $2.62¢, that's a nickel and nickel and a half lower for the day. And the heating oil at $3.23¢, that's up 4¾¢. Gold futures on the afternoon at $1,757.10 a troy ounce, up $32.66, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, while it breached through the 13,000 area earlier today, so settling back at about 12,950 at this time. The dollar at 79.04 is down 0.13, and the CRB index at 322.4 is up just about 5 points for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies. Those haven't shown up yet. A high of 46, says the National Weather Service. Should be breezy with a west wind at 16 to 21. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 32 with a southwest wind at 7 to 13. And then tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a high of 51. Wednesday night, cloudy at a low of 40. Thursday, a 30% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy and a high of 53 degrees. Thursday night, a 30% chance of showers continues. Mostly cloudy, a low of 32. And Friday, mostly cloudy, a high of 40 degrees. As we get into the weekend, Friday night, mostly cloudy and 26. Saturday, sunny and 39. Saturday night, cloudy and 29. Sunday should show us a partly sunny sky and a high of 49 degrees on Sunday night, a chance of rain. Mostly cloudy and a low of about 34 degrees. Next Monday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, a high near 43. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, on the phone line with us to take up what happened in the agricultural world. Let's start with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The last point I saw was about 12,950, Wayne. But it did jump through the 13,000 area earlier today. What do you see now?
Well, we got to 13,022 at one time here today, Todd. We're right now trading at 12,930, so we have backed off a little bit as far as the stock market goes. And I think probably a little enthusiasm come out of that as we look and look at what the oil prices are going to be for the stocks to the companies to remain profitable. But all in all, the stock market has had a great surge over the last few months, and it is helping the base feeling of all IRAs and everybody has something in a retirement program helped out a little bit.
And on the flip side, we have $105 a barrel crude oil, and it's up $2.26.
And if you watched the news programs last night, this morning, whatever, all we could hear about was the good chance of $5 gasoline for the summer and how it's going to strap our economy. So it's sort of hard to push the Wall Street on up knowing that they think we're going to strap our economy with high fuel prices.
Did those two things impact Chicago today, or was there something else?
We would have thought all the outside markets would have seen very positive towards the corn market, but instead we saw fund liquidation. The fund sold somewhere around 12,000 corn on a net basis and 4,000 wheat, or about even in the beans. We did see a lot of buying beans, selling corn, buying beans, selling wheat by some of the larger funds today, just thinking that the Outlook meeting here at the end of the week on Thursday and Friday is going to produce a tremendously large corn acreage and probably a forecast of tremendously large corn carryover for the coming year, Todd. But, we did see some good cash business on selling of some boats on Friday, some corn and beans to Russia, or to China. And we were just a little bit disappointed in how the markets did react today.
That's a good fundamental reason for the market to stay higher.
A good fundamental reason, we are tight on corn right now. We are back in profit level on ethanol. I know that the Linden plant over here is going to back on. They made some mechanical repairs over the last 2 weeks, and they're going to go back, and they're looking to go back to full production of ethanol. The Chinese corn market is basically the highest it's ever been. So that's some of the reasons that, at least in the near term, and on the old crop corn, that we're still not looking for a tremendously continued sell-off there.
And are there bearish fundamentals for new crop? I'm sure there are.
I think it's called lots and lots of acres and lots and lots of bushels, especially in the corn crop. We brought the corn-bean ratio back in line a lot more over the last 2 weeks, and that's trying to keep the bean acres up there so we don't have a shortage of beans for next year.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Gary Schnittke, Farm Management Specialist at the U of I, joined me in studio this morning to take up his latest Farm Doc Daily FEFO. That stands for Farm Economics Facts and Opinions. He took up crop insurance, wondering if RP with the harvest price exclusion was a good option for 2012 and comparing it to simple revenue protection. I asked him why he did it and what he found.
Yeah, RP has a guarantee increase in it, so it's if the harvest price goes up, the guarantee will increase. And that was important last year because last year we had a 601 projected price and our harvest price was 633. If you didn't take RP last year, you weren't likely to get paid because if you took RP with exclusion, the price went up, so your revenue went up and you probably didn't get an insurance payment. But what we did was compare RP with exclusion to RP. And what we in particular compared to was RP with exclusion with a 5% higher coverage level. Reason why we selected that was because they basically have the same premium. RP with exclusion, 5% higher, has the same premium as RP at a 5% lower. So RP 80% basically has the same premium as a RP with exclusion at 85%.
No, fairly close. You used a Macon County farm for your demonstration, and I think there was about $1.71 or something.
Yeah, there was $1.71 difference in price. The RP with exclusion was actually the higher of the two price products.
So can you summarize why you would choose one or the other, or what are the thought processes behind doing such?
You would take RP with exclusion at 85% if you were more concerned about price declines, because you have a higher guarantee, and it's not. And if you have a higher guarantee, you'll kick in premium or payments at a higher price. So if you're worried about higher price declines, you'll get paid more with the RP with exclusion than RP, given that you have a 5% higher coverage level. The trade-off, though, is that if we have higher prices and lower yields, RP with exclusion is going to make, or RP will make higher payments. And a good example of that is if we had a 1988 happen again, RP will make much higher payments than RP with exclusion. So you sort of have, if you want to stay in that same price range, you either emphasize lower prices or years like 1988.
So again, which one does what one more time?
RP with exclusion, if you take it at a 5% higher coverage level, will pay more if prices decline. RP will pay more with a lower coverage level if yields decline and price increase.
Is there some economic strategy that you might deploy in which you would prefer to use one or the other? For instance, if you hedge more often up front?
If you hedge more often up front, you're going to be pushed more to the RP policy. And the reason for that is because where some of your hedging losses will occur, or those years in which you have hedging losses, will be those in which prices go up and yields fall. And RP will pay more in those years and offset some of those hedging losses.
But you have to be a pretty
aggressive hedger before you begin worrying about those sorts of things.
Something in the 40% of your production range.
Or higher, yeah.
Right. So no real clear, definite answers, I suppose, for producers, just choices they can make.
Yep, just choices that they make. One other thing, obviously if you take RP 80%, you go to RP with exclusion at 80%, you'll have lower premium, but you'll get less coverage. If you want to stay at the same sort of RP 80% coverage level but are more concerned about price declines, you can jump up to RP with exclusion at 85% and have more price protection.
It's a funny thing at this point. Fundamentals say marketplace could look at a much lower price for corn, but the weather market says we've had 2 years in a row with a tough growing season. A third one could be in the offing, and things are setting up out west like 1988.
Yep. And if you knew which way to go there, you would be. Yeah. It's my betting right now would be, our futures prices are suggesting, $5.40, but they're likely to be very different than that, one way or the other. If we have a good year, it's be much lower. If we have the 1988, we could have $7, high $6, $7 corn.
And if we have a normal year, does that?
I would expect if we have a normal year, and a normal year would, be sort of trend line yields, we get most of the acres planted that we would expect. I would be expecting prices to be lower in harvest than they are now, building stocks and that sort of thing. One of the reasons why we have higher prices now is we've had 2 years in corn with below trendline yields.
There is one chart that you include with this particular Farm Doc Daily piece. Can you tell me about it?
It shows the difference in RP with exclusion premiums compared to RP, and it illustrates that RP with exclusion at an 85% coverage level will pay higher amounts at lower prices, and RP 80%, or the RP product, will pay at more at higher harvest prices and lower yields.
Thank you so much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is a farm management specialist at the University of Illinois. You can read his thoughts on RP exclusion versus RP and 80 and 85% coverages on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Hey, did you know that the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale is this coming Thursday in Springfield at the Illinois State Fairgrounds? As you'll hear, the auction starts at 11 o'clock. The Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale is the leadoff event for the Illinois Beef Expo. It will be the 44th IPT Bull Sale, says Dave Seibert.
An Illinois Performance Tested Bull is one that is raised in Illinois. It remains on the farm, in the producer's herd. All the data, meaning birth, weaning, yearling, scan information, on, is processed through the breed association. So thus, it just becomes part of that breed database. And thus, we can compare it to all other animals within that breed in the United States. We set pretty high standards regarding minimum requirements on weight per day of age. We got a frame window, minimum scroll, minimum pelvic, and on down the line. So once they sift through and get to the sale, they usually are what I call pretty high standard and kind of meet our spec.
That's a pretty good way to think about the 100 elite bulls already consigned to the sale. They have a set of specs, a bit like a farmer would read on a bag of seed corn, says Seibert.
I guess we can just look at the seed bag that we buy. The tag on it provides a lot of information about that seed corn. And it's the same thing in beef cattle. We can provide, you know, the same type of information that really tends to impact their cow-calf herd, starting all the way from conception, calving ease, growth potential, all the way through the end product, meaning the marbling and the size of the eye and that type of thing. So really, it's all about information anymore, and beef cattle selection is a very scientific venture right now that really is driven by a thing we call EPDs, expected progeny difference, and that really says what's going to happen in the next generation.
Again, a bit like buying a bag of seed corn for the row crop farmer. The buyer is purchasing proven genetics with some expectation of final yield.
And the same way here, when you buy a herd sire, you're buying expectation of what those offspring calves will do and how they will perform and what type of end product they will produce.
Farmers and ranchers interested in the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale should visit the website at iptbullsale.com. The 2012 IPT Bull Sale is set for this Thursday, the 23rd of February, at 11 o'clock a.m. on the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. Now up next, let's go way back in time to the 11th day of May, 1935. That's when President Franklin Roosevelt created the Rural Electric Administration, or the REA. It was a branch of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The REA was charged with lending money to help bring electricity to rural America. In that process, of course, it changed the landscape and life on the farm forever. In a moment, we'll hear a report on a 1940 docudrama called The Power and the Land. It was released and used by USDA for 20 years to convince farmers that they should form electric cooperatives.
In 1935, REA is born. 90% of all American farms without lighter power. The cities are lighted, the country still in the dark.
You and me and the neighbors, too, we get together and cut the corn. The knife goes.
Power in the Land follows the daily chores of a farm family in Ohio. The actors are real farmers. They cut corn and milk cows and iron clothes and stoke the stoves all by hand. It's long and hard work. The film sets all this work to music and lays out the reasons these Ohio farmers should form an electric cooperative.
Now they talk it over the country way, the slow, cautious decision of the people. Electricity. About time we got around here. Well, it sure would help me out, and the woman too. But the power company says, you can see their lines go cross country, see them in the sky, but they don't bring the power down to the farm. Say it costs too much.
It was and is still expensive to bring electric power to rural America. It takes a lot of money to lay a line to one farm. The power companies didn't want to do that, so the government made money available to those who would. And the electric cooperative was born.
But I hear there's a new kind of power. Government. That's right. I hear there's an agency. Rural electrification. Well, now, how do you go about it? I ain't for it, but I'm ready to be convinced. I'm for it if it gets us the power. Why don't we get a meeting? A meeting and hear about it. Find out about it. Don't have to take it unless we want, but find out about it. Government power for our farms.
For 20 years, well, up until the early 1960s, this film, The Power and the Land, was used at meetings like the one it depicts, where the county agent meets farmers on their home turf and tells them how they can bring electricity to the farm.
The REA was set up by the President and the Congress in 1935 to help farmers to get the power and light at a price they can afford. The REA loans money at low interest rates for line construction and, where necessary, for generating plants to the cooperative set up by the farmers in the community. There are no private investors, no profit making. You don't risk any cash yourself except a small membership fee. You get power at cost. When the loan from the government to your cooperative is paid back through your electric bills, you and your neighbors will own your own electric system, your own lines.
Through the REA, power lines reach deep into the countryside. In 1935, 90% of all American farms were without power. U.S. cities were lit, but the country, it was still dark. Over the next 5 years, some 600 electric cooperatives respond in 45 states. The power lines went up and out, thanks to the REA.
Hoist up the transformer. It means kilowatt hours of electricity. 1 kilowatt hour will do a week's wash, will grind 100 pounds of grain. 1 kilowatt hour will hoist 2 tons of hay. Kilowatt hours don't get tired.
Today, 930 electric cooperatives serve some 37 million people in 47 states, or about 80% of the counties in the U.S. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We'll say goodbye to some of you now. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to take up the agricultural weather forecast.
Support for stock and commodity reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
It's National Sticky Monday. Of course, a key ingredient is cinnamon, which originated in Sri Lanka. Marco Polo is credited with bringing cinnamon on a large scale to Europe. Modern sticky buns likely had their roots in medieval fritters. The sticky bun came to Philadelphia with 18th century English and German immigrants. On this day in agricultural history, in 1741, Jethro Tull died. He was an English agriculturalist and inventor whose ideas were instrumental in the development of modern English agriculture. One of his inventions was a horse-drawn seed planting drill that sowed three even rows of seed at once. The music group Jethro Tull was named for him. In 1858, Edwin T. Holmes sells the first electric burglar alarm in the U.S. in Boston, Massachusetts. His workshop was, by the way, used later by Alexander Graham Bell. In 1895, Carl Peter Henrik Dam was born. Dam was a British biochemist who discovered vitamin K in 1939. In 1985, Nathan Pritikin died. He was a nutritionist who believed that exercise and a low-fat, high unrefined carbohydrate diet helped reverse his own heart disease. He founded the Pritikin Longevity Center in 1976. In 1989, on this date, the USDA approved Simplese as a low-calorie fat substitute. In 1994, Whirlpool began manufacturing a refrigerator that was significantly more efficient and did not use Freon. Freon has been implicated in the destruction of ozone in the atmosphere. And that's this date in agricultural history.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming on the phone line to take up the forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start here in the Midwest, my neck of the woods around Urbana-Champaign. It's kind of a bit warmer and was a bit rainy, but looks like it's going to have some clearer skies over the next few days. What do you see?
Well, we're going to have a little bit of, as you mentioned, some fair weather come in for a couple of days, but don't expect it to last. We're going to see some colder weather move into the Midwest and Plains states with a pretty decent little cold front coming in Thursday night and into the day Friday. Not a lot of precipitation with it, but do expect it to get quite a bit colder. And from what we're seeing on our long-range forecast charts, we're going to have a series of weather systems, quite a few of them, spaced apart about every 3 or 4 days, move coast to coast. And these are going to be systems that are going to be quick moving, but energetic and somewhat cold. We may have more winter weather in some parts of the nation over the next 2 or 3 weeks than we have had for a lot of the season so far. So it's going to be getting more active.
And if you look out into other parts of the world, what do you see for the growing regions in South America, China, maybe even Australia, please?
Well, in South America, the trend here lately has been, at least for Brazil, to get a little bit more wet. Argentina has slipped back into a dry pattern, not completely dry, but we've seen soil moisture profiles get a little bit poorer, a little bit drier in Argentina, so they're still suffering down there in terms of a lack of rainfall, especially the Argentina area. For Australia, well, their prospects for rain a little bit better. Many areas of Australia will be picking up near normal, slightly above normal amounts of precipitation.
Anything that we ought to be aware of across the planet? For instance, has the very, very cold weather finally abated in parts of Ukraine and Russia, or are they still under a deep freeze?
Well, it has abated in terms of the severe cold, although there are still portions of eastern, southern, and southwest Europe that will still average below normal temperatures. But the severe cold in the Ukraine, many areas of Russia, has eased.
Do you think it's caused much of a damage to that crop that is still in dormancy?
It may have. Now, a real big question mark will be areas that were that severely cold and whether or not there was a lot of snow cover. There was a fair amount of snow cover in many of those areas, as the cold was associated with some pretty good snow. So that is a possibility that some protection from that snow cover was there, but there were some areas that were definitely exposed to the type of temperatures that could have caused damage.
Don, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.